Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So let's turn the page. Here is President Obama from his speech on race last Friday. Listen carefully, and then let's talk.
Yeah, there's been talk about should we convene a conversation on race. I haven't seen that be particularly productive when politicians try to organize conversations. They end up being stilted and politicized, and folks are locked into the positions they already have. On the other hand, in families and churches and workplaces, there's the possibility that people are a little bit more honest, and at least you ask yourself your own questions about, am I wringing as much bias out of myself as I can? Am I judging people as much as I can based on not the color of their skin, but the content of their character? That would, I think, be an appropriate exercise in the wake of this tragedy.
President Obama last Friday. We'll play more clips from that very moving and thought-provoking speech as we go here, but let's have a small piece of that conversation. We didn't book any guests for this because we wanted to become not about what some expert or advocate thinks. This is about people talking to each other and I hope really listening to each other. So here's my idea and my hope for the rest of this hour. Let's try to have a multiracial and multigenerational call-in about race. Our first question will be for millennials. That is, anyone born in 1980 or later. Do you think race relations are better for you than your parents? 212-433-WNYC. And here's why I asked that question. It also comes from the president. We're going to play one of the very interesting things that he said in his speech. And it's probably a good indicator of, you know, the state of things to come in our increasingly multiracial nation, if he's right, or how people are reacting to it. So I wonder if you agree that his kids' generation deals with race a lot more easily than his generation and older. So 212-433-WNYC. If you are a millennial born 1980 or later, 212-433-9692. We'll save some lines for white people, black people, other people, and listen to what the president said about this.
As difficult and challenging as this whole episode has been for a lot of people, I don't want us to lose sight that things are getting better. Each successive generation seems to be making progress in changing attitudes when it comes to race. Doesn't mean we're in a post-racial society. It doesn't mean that racism is eliminated. But, you know, when I talk to Malia and Sasha, and I listen to their friends and I see them interact, they're better than we are. They're better than we were on these issues. And that's true in every community that I've visited all across the country. And so, you know, we have to be vigilant and we have to work on these issues. And those of us in authority should be doing everything we can to encourage the better angels of our nature as opposed to using these episodes to heighten divisions. But we should also have confidence that kids these days, I think, have more sense than we did back then, and certainly more than our parents did or our grandparents did, and that along this long, difficult journey, we're becoming a more perfect union. Not a perfect union, but a more perfect union.
About 2 minutes of President Obama from last Friday. And by the way, in case you didn't know, that was a speech from his heart, from his head. There was no teleprompter. he didn't have notes, so it didn't sound like, you know, a speech from a podium in a concert hall, that kind of thing. It was as low-key as you just heard. But he certainly got his ideas out there, and in that case, about generational change. So we'll begin with a call-in for millennials, which generally means anyone born in 1980 or later. Do you think your generation is better on these issues, as the president suggests, than your parents' generation or your grandparents' generation? And if so, what does that look like? How does it play out? How does it feel? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we'll start taking your calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's a call-in for millennials to begin a multi-generational conversation and multiracial conversation, of course, about race. If you were born in the 80s or later, is the president right? Do you think your generation deals with race better than your parents' generation? And if so, what does that mean? What does that look like for you day to day? How do you experience it? 212-433-9692. And with us now are Jonathan in Manhattan, Moses in Westbury, KB in Newark, and Marion in Brooklyn. We're putting all of you on the air at the same time. Hi, Marion. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
And KB, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Jonathan, you there?
Yeah, I hear you.
And Moses in Westbury, can you hear me?
Yep, I'm here.
Whoever's radio is on, please turn it off, because we're going to get feedback and it's going to make it much harder for people to understand you. Thanks. So, Moses, you want to start and jump in and give us your reaction to what the president said there and how you live it in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely do think that the president's on the right track here. Generation that I'm currently in is definitely much more progressive on these issues. And I think that's, you know, great here, but, you know, we still have a long way to go, because although, you know, we tend to be more progressive on these issues, there's still that latent bit of, you know, bias that's in the background. So,
Jonathan, you want to jump in?
Yeah, you know, I totally agree with that, you know, with his statement, which is that, you know, I think what happened is in our parents' generation, you know, it started to become sort of, you know, not culturally acceptable to be bigoted, and so it started disappearing from the kind of conversation. And when that happened, our generation started realizing that there wasn't as much difference. In fact, a lot of kids, I think, maintain that longer, that they don't even realize that their friends are black or Asian or anything until someone pointed out around their early teen years or something. And I think that we don't realize it until later, because it's no longer culturally acceptable to say things that are bigoted, to do things that are bigoted.
Jonathan, take me a little deeper on that. You identified yourself to our screener as white, so I'll say that on the air. Is there a conversation among your friends about your own biases, and is there a distinction based on what you just said between things that are acceptable to say and things that are acceptable to feel?
Well, you know, yeah, definitely. You know, and I'm actually a physician, and we go through this training session in medical school even, which is, you know, that you have to, every generation, every single person on the planet has biases. And the first step in making those things better and moving forward, you know, to that ultimate utopia of, you know, a more perfect union, like I think he was talking about, where we don't see color at all, but we don't see anything, is recognizing that there's been a history of that, and recognizing that we all have prejudices, whether we're white or whether we're black or Asian or whatever color we are. You know, recognizing those things, and then from that point being able to be aware of our behaviors and how we may be perceived, even if, you know, we think we're not, you know, favoring one versus another.
KB, want to jump in? What are you thinking?
I've had the benefit of growing up with two prior generations, both my mother's generation and then my grandparents' generation. And, you know, like the things that, from my grandparents' point of view, just looking at somebody's color, would give you an idea of whether or not they were, comfortable with you or not. And in my mother's generation, something came out, if somebody were to say something or something like that, the reaction would immediately be that's something racist. But in my generation, how I was raised, with the people I was raised around, certain words don't necessarily set off the exact same actions. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I completely understand where my parents and my grandparents are coming from. That's just not the time that we live in.
Why wouldn't those words set off the same reaction?
Well, I mean, certain of those words I know just pretty much are just repeated so much that somebody who some of the callers that are on right now would not have seen as, oh, that's a bad word. I grew up with it, so and so, and I've heard people of other races use it, so I don't consider it to be a bad thing. And whereas how I was brought up, okay, yeah, that might have been bad back in the 60s, but nowadays, like in 2000s and even in the late 90s and 2000s, that word doesn't mean the exact same thing, depending on who it's coming from and how it was used.
Are you talking about the N-word and whether even white people can use it in a kind of, familiar way?
That's not the only word. I mean, I guess that's the major word, but that's not the only word. Yeah, but pretty much how it's used and when it's used. Because, I mean, I was, between my grandparents and my parents, I was basically brought up on the whole, black power, take care of your own first, and then everybody else comes second. And then, but at the same time, how I grew up around the people that I grew up around who were of all mixed races. One of my best friends to this day, he was the first somebody from India, like an actual Indian person, somebody from India who lived in our neighborhood, and we loved the guy. You know what I mean? So but back in the 70s and the 50s, if he'd have moved into the exact same neighborhood, there would have been an issue.
Mm. Marion, you want to jump in from Brooklyn?
Hi, I just want to say thanks for taking my call. Well, first of all, I want to say that there are no perfect generations. We, especially with my parents. My parents are in their mid-50s. They're really, when it comes to other races, I want to just say that they are kind of prejudiced, racist in a way. I have friends from any race. I have black friends, Asians, whatever. And I feel like we're a lot more lenient nowadays. There's still a lot to do to work on. I'm not saying our generation is perfect, but we're definitely going in the right direction.
Any of you want to ask any of the others of you anything?
I wonder if Mr. Jonathan in Manhattan. One of the things that I've noticed is that as we get the beautiful outcome of living in the United States, which is that you begin having more and more multi-ethnic people, around, that those lines seem to be blurred and beautifully blurred in a way that, makes us more acutely aware that the differences between people are less relevant. I remember the story of a friend of mine who moved here from Panama. His father's white, mother's black, and he's Hispanic. And when he got here, he went to school. And they asked him when he arrived there in Florida, well, what race are you? And his answer was, oh, no, I'm human. Totally thinking that, they were asking what his species was. And then they said, no, are you black, white, or Hispanic? And he said, yes. and I think that helps us to realize, to move beyond, this idea of one versus the other. We're all just kind of here together. And I think people in our generation start to see it more that way than in prior generations.
And if I can, this is KB. If I can, I would like to add that when I was growing up in school, they had that great big groundbreaking thing that said that humanity is 99.99% all exactly the same. It's just that last 0.01% that determines what skin color you are and what facial features you may have. And that had a huge impact on me. I'm in ninth grade science class, figuring out that, the white person sitting next to me is basically the exact same person as me, just that their skin is a little bit different. So to me, it became more to see who is the person rather than what is their type.
I
agree.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Anybody keep going? All right.
I'm sorry, what? Well, I would like to just add really quickly, that I think it's very important that we in the discussion don't lose the fact that, differences are great. And, I love the fact that I can go into, let's say, Koreatown and have
you know, a nice Korean barbecue meal and, you know, the ethnic vibe and everything within that situation. So I think a lot of people sometimes take, you know, racial prejudices to mean, oh, you have to not acknowledge race at all. I think acknowledging races and difference and cultures are important. But, you know, we just need to move to a place to where, you know, that is not the deciding factor of how we might potentially feel about somebody or any particular action, that any action doesn't go, oh, yes, it was done to me by a white person or a black person or a Hispanic person, and then it becomes different as a result of that.
You have any good Korean barbecue recommendations in Westbury?
No, definitely not over here.
That would be elsewhere. All right. Well, I want to thank all of you for starting us off so well. I really appreciate you you all jumping in and talking to me and talking to each other. KB in Newark, Marion in Brooklyn, Moses in Westbury, Jonathan in Manhattan. Thank you very much.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
And let's get some other folks on here right now who've been waiting. Let's go to Latifa in Manhattan and Steve in the Bronx.
Hello.
Hi, Latifa. How you doing?
Hi there. How are you?
Good. And Steve in the Bronx, can you hear me?
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. And Hallie in Denville. Hallie, are you there?
Yeah.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hallie, Steve, Latifa, and we may add one more as we go along here, as we now have some other open lines and people can call up and get in, 212-433-WNYC. So, Latifa, what were you thinking when you were listening to those other guys?
I was thinking that, well, they're a little younger than me. I was born in 82, and I feel like I was kind of, on the cusp of my parents' generation, and I was taught a lot of fear growing up, and definitely to stick to your own, only because, and I know that my parents did it for my protection, but because the fears for them were just so real and it was so visceral because it literally just happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
So they were definitely wary of me being around different cultures, even though my mother is culturally diverse. So because of her, you know, I was exposed to the arts and had a wide range of friends. But at the end of the day, I was definitely told, you know, at the end of the day, you only have your family, and you're definitely different. And when I got out into the world, a lot of times, a lot of things reinforced that for me. Like, I found that I wasn't able to express, I was able to express anger without being seen as having an attitude, so I would smile more so that I wouldn't be threatening.
Right, that's a big one, right? That black people run into all the time, right?
Yeah, so I definitely never wanted to be perceived as having an attitude. So
with that experience, does it make you think that the president is not as right as you wish he might have been about things being better in this generation?
No, I think he is right. I think he's very right. My sister is 10 years younger than me, and her experience with race is completely different. She doesn't censor herself the way that I do. She actually helps me work on, like, a lot of the issues that I had ingrained into me. So it's like yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
People that are my age, we're aware of it, but definitely not in the same way that our parents were. For instance, like, even though my father remembers, you know, he went to the first high school that was integrated in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So there were literally riots every day. So he remembers that. But at the same time, I was never stopped from going places and having friends and mm-hmm. different experiences,
mm-hmm. right.
even though it was with a little caution.
So let me bring Hallie into this in Denville. And I want to say that Hallie's 13 years old, so I appreciate your courage, Hallie, and calling up at all and being on with a couple of grown-ups. So what are you thinking?
I think a lot
lot of things are going to change in the future, because I know in my generation, I'm going into eighth grade, and I think a lot of people, almost everyone, or actually everyone in our school, they don't really care what race someone is or what the color of their skin is. I think, like, they judge someone based on their personality, so no one even notices the color of someone's skin or their race or anything like that.
You think that's really true?
From what I've seen, I've been to a lot of different schools, and everywhere I go, that seems to be what it's like for my generation.
If you have a diverse classroom or a diverse group of people that you're in, you think you don't even notice it, or you kind of...
I don't think
maybe you're noticing really it and appreciating it, but you think you're not noticing it?
I mean, I think we do appreciate having a diverse group of people, but we don't really care the color of someone's skin. It's more about their personality that we judge them on.
Steve in the Bronx, come on in.
Hey, how's it going? I guess I wanted to say in response to Obama's words, I think there's a lot of truth to what he said about, you know, the current youthful generation being a little better on race. But what that kind of masks is that the questions for this generation are different than for generations in the past. I mean, I think I had a discussion with my parents where I was trying to explain to them, and I'm white, I'm from a white family, that income inequality, for example, has gotten worse for African Americans over the last 30 years, since like 1980 or so. And they straight up didn't believe me. They were like, that's ridiculous. That's impossible. And I had to, you know, Google and pull up some New York Times charts and stuff, and I showed them, and they were in disbelief. Like, and they were like, you know, when I was a kid, Steve, like, the colleges were so white. Like, you know, things have changed. Like, things appear to be getting so much better. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, look at the statistics. I mean, I think that the issues today aren't about the individual acts of meanness of racism, but rather the systematic oppressive kind of stuff that we might not even see, like things that Michelle Alexander talks about in the new Jim Crow, you know, mass incarceration, those kinds of issues that really complicate the question a lot more. So maybe kids are a little more tolerant than they were 30 years ago, and maybe grown-ups are too, but that doesn't mean racism is over. It just means it's changing.
Latifah, want to come back in? Latifah, any reaction to that?
To
either of the other callers?
Sophia.
Right, okay.
Hello?
Yeah, hi. Did you want to say anything else?
Yeah, as far as the income inequality, yeah, it's definitely very real, and I've also noticed a very sharp divide between myself and my counterparts as far as black men is concerned. I've noticed that it's easier for me to assimilate into social situations and to maneuver as far as...
than it is for men.
I've noticed that, yeah.
How come?
I guess that's kind of complicated. I don't know.
Well, if you knew the answer for that, then you'd be the... You'd be the next president.
I probably would be, but it's definitely intimidation. I mean, I do know that, like, as a people, we do isolate ourselves, and I know it's for protection. But then something happens, such as, like, a Trayvon Martin, that causes us to isolate ourselves more. I think that as a defense mechanism, we... you know, posture ourselves to kind of protect ourselves, which is seen as hostility or an intimidation, which just feeds into the cycle, feeds into the problem, and then no one understands anybody. That's all I got.
And that's a lot. So, Latifah, thank you for contributing so much. Steve and Hallie, thank you for contributing so much. Now, here's what we're going to do, and screeners, take note. For our final piece of this conversation, we're going to clear the board and let anybody in now of any age, but we're still going to make sure we have multiracial conversations. And I want people to react to another clip from the president's speech because, in a way, the conversations about race that we were just having were relatively easy, and people were kind of mostly on the same wavelength there. And I'm going to up the ante a little bit and play another clip from the president's speech talking about the reaction to the Trayvon Martin killing and the Zimmerman verdict. The president addressed the perception by many whites that the media and black politicians and civil rights leaders should be paying more attention to black-on-black crime, so-called, because the much bigger statistical risk to the life of an innocent young black man is a criminal young black man by far compared to encounters with police officers or white people. So here's another minute and a half of the president.
Now, this isn't to say that the African-American community is naive about the fact that African-American young men are disproportionately involved in the criminal justice system, that they're disproportionately both victims and perpetrators of violence. It's not to make excuses for that fact, although black folks do interpret the reasons for that in a historical context. They understand that some of the violence that takes place in poor black neighborhoods around the country is born out of a very violent past in this country, and that the poverty and dysfunction that we see in those communities can be traced to a very difficult history. And so the fact that sometimes that's unacknowledged adds to the frustration. And the fact that a lot of African-American boys are painted with a broad brush, and the excuse is given, well, there are these statistics out there that show that African-American boys are more violent. Using that as an excuse to then see sons treated differently causes pain.
President Obama from his race speech on Friday. Who wants to react to that? Can we get some people of varying backgrounds to call in? We're going to open up the phones right now, specifically react to that piece of the president's speech and see if we can bridge the racial divide. And there's such a big racial divide on that question, or at least listen to each other. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll put you on the air right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we're having a little bit of that national conversation on race that the president and others have been calling for. And we just played that clip where the president gave kind of the African-American view. I guess he was sort of articulating for white people, you know, what a lot of African-Americans think and feel when they hear, as well as, of course, his own feelings and thoughts, when he hears that comparison, oh, blacks have a lot to fear from black people, young black men from other young black men, more than from any cop or any neighborhood watch volunteer or white person statistically. So how about that? Is the media too obsessed with these race-on-race cases when we should be talking more about crime in general and the political sector? 212-433-9692. And let's start with Craig in South Jamaica, Queens. Hi, Craig.
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Quickly, I won't take a lot of time. But, you know, people that's not from minority neighborhoods always think that we don't know that we are victims of crime. You know, where we are, where we live at, if our apartment is burglarized or our car is stolen, usually there's a person that looks like us, and we know. But even with the stop and frisk, like Dorsmond, example, you got a guy working, you know, the cops harass him, he end up dead. He could have just been easily accosted by another black guy drinking and got killed. Or even Sean Bell. You know, we know, but we're frustrated when people not like us do crimes against us too, because it's like we get on both fronts. We know what we get. We live in the community we live in. We know, you know, we work and try to make our community better. But when people are there that's supposed to be making our community better, or we should have no problem with them. We have problem with them, like Trayvon just walking, minding his business, for all intents and purposes, not doing anything. Nothing has come out that he had burglary tools or anything, and people don't want to see it. Like, whatever kind of problems he would have did and whatever, he worked doing them that day, and that's just what I want to say.
Craig, hang on 1 second. I want to add Mike in Newark to this call. Hi, Mike.
How you doing, Brian?
Mike, good. What are you thinking as you listen to Craig, as you heard the president's clip?
As I said to your screener, you know, what I felt about George Zimmerman, that whole thing with the president and the division he created, was because here, as a white man who voted for the president, who has numerous supervisors who are African-American, and you sit there and you go, wait a minute, George Zimmerman looks like a Latino to me. Here I am with the light eyes, you know, light hair. And he looks Latino. I mean, so when they say, like, he's white, and I'm expecting a picture of, you know, a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, you know, image, I see this, you know, obviously Spanish person.
Well, I think they said he's Latino, but what are you getting at?
They went so far to say white Hispanic, Brian, and what I'm saying is what the division that I felt the president was creating was because here he's representing all of us, the whole country. And I understand where he's coming from about, you know, he was that boy. I get that. But at this point, it's more, you know, okay, this is a white, black thing. No, it really wasn't, because I looked at George Zimmerman, and I can't imagine, after seeing his mother on stand and all, you know, and knowing that he's got a Peruvian background, that he felt that type of you know, racism with his mother's accent and all that other thing.
Craig, what are you thinking?
You know, I want to say the commentaries from the right made this black and white. You know, people supported Zimmerman just because he shot a black guy. Not because they liked him, not because they like Hispanics. They supported him. You know, it's people that's like race baiters on both sides. And if you want to pick a side, you can't pick the side that said this guy who was minding his business, doing nothing, was wrong. A guy that got out of his car and confronted this guy was right. Whether you want to say Hispanic, and Hispanics and blacks in the early 60s used to live in this world too. If you could pass a white, if you could smile, you know, some Hispanics claim to be white, even though they're not. But, you know, when you look at the census form, you have the right to say Hispanic white. So that is this. But, you know, I just reiterated my point was just that we acknowledge that we live in this world where we're most likely to be accosted by a person of our own ethnic heritage. But the same is for whites. But when they look at blacks, they look like we're going to be the one to attack them. But if you look at the history of America, the John Gottis, the Sammy Bulls, people who can admit it, 19 murders and 20 murders. Yeah. Who did they kill? Other Italians. But Italian women will cuss their purse thinking I'm going to be the one that's rob them and kill them.
And by the way, George Zimmerman was, what, 27, 28? So he was a millennial, so not all is hunky-dory in that age group if there was racial animus there. But Mike, go ahead. You're going to get the last word here.
That's correct. If there was some animus towards a black man per se, and he was saying, you know what, I'm going after this guy. If George Zimmerman did have that notion, I'm going after this guy because he's black, then you're right. But that was never proven. That wasn't even what he was on trial for. And that's what I was saying to your screener about the president's statement. And I support the president. I think he did a great job. He's doing a great job. Voted for him. However, I think he was a little offbeat on this one. I think he missed it. Because he is our president, not just the black president. He is the president of the United States, and he's got to understand that. You know, that's just like Craig said. It feels a little like race baiting to me. Like, well, you know, where are you going? If you're representing us all as a whole, and you know, you want me to stand up and say you are a fair and honest president, and I, which I do. I think he really
You wanted to hear more than that perspective. Well, that has to be the last word for today. Mike in Newark and Craig in South Jamaica, thank you both very much for your courage to speak up on any of this. And obviously, we have not settled race relations in America this morning, but we had a little piece of the national dialogue, and we will continue to do this time after time. Brian Lehrer and WNYC.